It's either somebody that I've known, except that I think it just reminds me of somebody I've known, like my grandfather, somebody who's older and whom I'm very comfortable around, like a very explaining type of person. It's as though there are more people than one, but I think I only talked to one. And I'm more curious about where I am and more curious about the room and the immediate environment I'm in than where they come from and what they mean or what they're about. The room doesn't have an alien feeling, it's just different than I've seen, fancy, modern, and it seems pretty big. It seems like the room is either spherical, no, the room is like a round room or half of a round room. I don't see behind me, but what I'm looking at is round, I think, and it's like the walls are round, too. Round. It is a quality like the TWA terminal at JFK, round, curved walls. There are lots of things to catch my eyes, things that shine, they're sparkly, like crystals or like instrumentation ore, but they're so pretty that they don't distinguish in my eyes between whether they are things, or art. Just pretty. Like pearls and like crystals and like metal, mostly silver. It doesn't seem to be gold-culled. It seems to be silver-colored. And it's big, it seems it's big, it seems, bigger than your Dr. Clay Mars living room. It seems maybe bigger than my living room, but not quite as big as my whole apartment. It's a big space. But, of course, I was littler. And the light doesn't come from any one place and it isn't all the same color. It changed a little bit and there are colors in different places, but only soft. How did you get from the chicken coop to here? You know, it could be that I went to the chicken coop afterwards. The chicken coop, I don't know. I don't know, puzzled hesitation. Let me see. How did I get there? I'm so overwhelmed by being in the place that I am that I don't even remember getting there. How did I get there? Gently. It wasn't rough. AC, it wasn't rough. VH, no, it was gentle. It was like I was playing and I was just doing something and then all of a sudden I'm somewhere else. Nothing rough about it. Not rough at all. I think, however, it is just that I get there or something. But I don't understand. Just, here I am. Then I think it's all right. Quiet, too. There's not much sound, maybe a soft, subdued hum or noise like a humidifier makes, but there's not a lot of noise. It's nothing like flashy or bright or noisy, or abrupt, like maybe I'm just in the yard and then I'm somewhere else gently, nothing noisy or flashy or abrupt about it. It's almost like it's a dream. Long pause, in fact, maybe I thought it was a dream except I'd never had a dream like that. Emphatic, also there's a strong sense of person to the person I'm talking to. A very grandfatherly quality about him, a quality that reminds me of my grandfather, who is very loving and very patient, likes to explain and share things with me and he's fun. The place is like a dream. Except the person's not like a dream. The communication is very real. What else did he tell me? I think he explained things. Well, you know, it's almost as though it was somebody I knew. You know. Like how are you? How are things here and how have you been? It isn't necessarily somebody I specifically knew but it does have a quality to it. Like somebody I know. Hello, how are you? How are things? They're fine. They're fine. This is such a nice place. And, long pause, I guess we did talk about the stars. It's like he says, you know, you look up at the sky. You see all those stars. Yes, I have done that. And each one of those stars is a place like the sun that has its own places, like your place. And all of those stars have their places. There are a lot of things there. A lot of different homes, and we're from a long way away, from one of those places, and it seems that he spent some time explaining to me that there are different kinds of places, you know, some that are like where I live and some that are very different and some that are very nice and some that aren't and some that are modern and some that aren't. And so it's a very big, exciting place to explore. You would like to go and see a lot of different places, what they're like. Some of those people know each other and some of them don't, and he knows quite a lot of them. It's an sort of matter of fact. Mean, it's just like somebody would describe visiting Europe to you, you know, that there are different countries and they do different things in different countries, and you can travel between them like, pretty much like explaining to a child about foreign places. And also that the people that live there are all very different and some of them know things and can do things that are a lot different, mostly friendly, but not all. Kind of a long description of the variousness of life, places that people live and the adventures of visiting different places and learning more about it. And I guess, he explains why I am there, in the craft. Middle dot that I am part of that adventure of discovering a new place and that it, Earth, seems like a nice place. And I say, yes, it is. It is a nice place. And I guess I ask him what his place is like, too, and, what did he say? He says his place is different, that it would look strange to me, but not super strange, and, he was very happy. He was very happy about meeting, about visiting, about talking to me and me. It's like the whole thing is a big happiness for him, as though he, you know, I have that sense that, it's a big deal one. Happy thing for them just to be talking to me and he's trying to share their excitement with me. And I'm not so excited as I am just kind of happy about it and, let's see, he's sort of, he doesn't tell me too much about himself, it's like, he has hands, says he has hands. It's like his fingers are longer. Well, I mean, maybe not longer, but it's like they're skinnier. He calls to mind, I don't know whether he calls to mind or his description calls to mind, maybe like tree frogs have, you know, and I don't remember if he says how many fingers. However many there are, it isn't like they're a lot different, maybe four, maybe there's six. It isn't a lot different. And, I think he says that they're a little grayer than we are in color and he says that it would take me quite a while to get used to how he looks. I don't feel any overwhelming compulsive curiosity specifically about it. It's as if he's right there, just in the process of communicating. When I was a little kid, I always had a very easy rapport with older people, my grandparents and other people. He's just like another one of them. You know, like discovering another old friend. I have always had older people, friends, who explain things to me, and I accept it as just that kind of a thing. And what else? They have eyes. The eyes are different than ours. I don't remember exactly how. They might not have eyelids. And they might not have two eyes, they might have three or they might have two. I'm not sure about that, but they have eyes, and I think they stand. I think they have a body that stands up like ours does. Tall. Slim, type body. They can walk around, and the eyes are at the top. Let's see. Sort of going through the parts of him that are like the parts of us. Let's see if he says anything that's different. Ah, the skin's different. Bones are different. I guess he says his insides are arranged different. And I think he says something about the brain is a percentage of their total body, it's a bigger part of them. Now what else did he say is different? I think hair. I don't remember whether they don't have any hair or whether the hair is different or whatever their surface is, it's somewhat different. Smoother, I think. Maybe like soft, pearly leather. It seems like their bones are different. I don't think he said whether he was a man or a woman. But it seems like whatever it is, it reminds me of a masculine thing, grandfatherly. Grandfatherly. He's old. Yes, he's definitely old and he doesn't tell me how old, old is. He's just old. And that reminds me of my grandfather, too, who used to lie about his age, and he would say he was 103, which he wasn't, but he would just say it because he was telling me that he was old. And this person told me that he was very old, too, but he wouldn't tell me how old. I think I just talked to one person. It seems like a long time. It seems like a whole afternoon, you know, a long, relaxed afternoon. AC, inaudible question about the incision. 144, VH, it's almost as though the couch has a thing on it which does that by itself, and I didn't see the person who does it. It's as though it's done remotely. You know, have you seen those things where you put your hands in when they handle radioactive material? Your hands go in and you handle instruments and then, at a remote location, something happens. It's like that. I don't think they have any direct contact with me, physically. It's as though wherever I am lying there on that side of me behind the wall, or perhaps that's just where the sound comes from. It's as though I am talking to them over there in the next room. I guess it's because they tell me that, you know, I breathe my kind of air. I guess they breathe different air. I'm not sure about that, but it's as though, well, whatever it is, it's for my comfort. All this, it's just like you find it so natural. Matter of fact. Break is continuity where the tape was changed. VH discusses wanting to see them again, but how can they find her? VH, it's an easy thing. It's almost as though he can identify me by, it's just like I stick out who I am, you know, like he can tell where I am. AC, how can he tell who you are? VH, like he can recognize a voice. It's like, he says, I can recognize your voice. It's sort of like recognizing brain waves, or something. It's like everybody has their own pattern, own trademark, so that he doesn't have any problem about that. When I think of it, I didn't explain. It seems that I just accepted that. He said, it's one like recognizing your voice. AC, does the wound have any function in their ability to recognize you? VH, I'm thinking, pause, they didn't talk about blood. They just said, take a little, teeny piece of you home. It's as though, the way they described it to me, it's like a combination of a souvenir. Yeah, I guess it does, a combination of a souvenir and a way of getting to know me better. And they asked my permission and they said it's very important and it won't hurt. And I say, fine. So I don't watch. It's as though there's kind of, crumbed stuff over there, you know. And so I don't watch. I don't think it feels anything more than when you rub your fingernail on your skin or, pause, maybe, I don't know whether maybe it hurt, and they told me it wouldn't hurt. Since I decided to do this, undergo hypnosis, and I've been thinking about it, it's like I could feel feeling in my leg. It's as though maybe there was pain there, but I was told it wouldn't hurt, and then I didn't feel it. It was like the pain was inside and the pain wanted to come out, but I don't think it hurt at the time. And I think I asked, aren't you going to put a band-aid on it? And they said, no, we'll just stop it from bleeding. So whatever they do it, you know, like this, and then it just closes itself and stops bleeding. Like that's all part of what they touch me with, you know, just like, pop. But there's no band, aid. Okay. So that's fine. Yeah, I guess they leave it attached to me. I mean next to me as though it's just holding it against me, and yeah, it's against my leg. Soft, like that, and, pause, he has to explain to me that in a while that I can't remember him, yeah. And you won't be able to remember unless you see me again. I have a hard time understanding why not. He says, you know, people will be upset, and I say, why? He says because it's different than what they do. It's one of those things, kids, you know, why? 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 This is just nice, you know. My mother won't be upset. I'm certain. They say, well, that may be, but other people will be and you don't want them to treat you like you're weird just because you visited me. No. Why would they do that? Because people just do. Now, I don't think so, I just don't think so. Yes, they do. It's sort of like I don't believe him, but he tells me that that is the way it is, because I don't have a sense of weirdness about it, so I can't imagine why anybody else would. We laugh about some things. I can't remember what? Some things are funny. Some kind of chuckle, A-C, V-I, A-C, V-H, Things like, oh, it's funny. It seems like we laugh about chickens. I don't know. It's just that we do some laughing about how funny things were. I don't really know what. Yeah, he just asked me if I would like to visit him at his home, and I said, yes, I would. And so that's another maybe. I ask him if it's nice, and he says, yes, it is. You feel a lot like the way it feels right now, and, he seems to enjoy how much I enjoy all the sparkly things. It doesn't mean that they have a lot of sparkly things at home. Inaudible question about the purpose of his visit. We had, it's the adventure of it. You know, it's the fun of it and the adventure of it. He explains about all those wonderful, interesting places to visit. How different life is in different places and, the different kinds of animals and plants and people and different ways of doing things, and that it's so interesting to see and learn about them. So he just explains it like an adventure. It's funny. When I went to graduate school, remember that people would ask me what I wanted to do. I said I wanted to be an adventurous. And I was very taken with the idea of adventure, and traveling around and seeing neat things and trying neat things, meeting interesting people. It sounded like a lot of fun, and he said it was a lot of fun, and that was why he had come to see me and that's why he would try to come back another time to see me again if he could. Yes, he painted a wonderful picture of all there is to see. Beautiful things, unbelievable things, and no end to them. No matter how long you looked or how far you went, you'd never get to the end of them. Did he tell you how you could get to visit these places? Yes, he said he could take me there, but that it would take a while and that we didn't have time now. Maybe some other time he would. And, you know, like, your mom would be upset if we went away for a while, you know. A while didn't seem to be years, you know. It could have been months. But it would take a while, which seemed natural, of course, and, he couldn't do that without asking my mother's permission. And I said I was sure she wouldn't care. I said I'd ask her. No, we couldn't do that just now. He didn't say he would and he didn't say he wouldn't, but it was just something we couldn't do right then, so maybe we would do it another time. A.C. Has he done it for others? Has he taken others to his place? V.H. I don't think I asked him. I don't think, you know, the light might have been very bright. It seems like my eyes hurt me. Virginia was rubbing her eyes, maybe the light was very bright. Pretty, but bright. Returns to the question. Did he take others? Well, when we talked about it, he didn't talk about it as though it was a new idea or something that was an odd question. It was like, you know, you'd ask your grandfather if he would take you to town to go to a movie, and it wasn't that, it was a novel idea or anything. It was as if he felt like it. He could or would, and I don't think I asked about anybody else. It seemed like it was just a special relationship with me, but you see that was true of the way I related to older people. So I don't know whether that was, I mean, I was especially close to my grandparents and especially close to aunts and uncles and it was always a very special relationship to me. They were closer to me, it was just that kind of a thing. We were good buddies and that just seemed very natural to me, but he talked about the adventure of it as though he wasn't the only person who did it. People did it because it was a neat thing to learn, and a fun thing to look around. And it didn't seem it was unusual for more than one person to do it. The thing is, you know, it wasn't like I was talking to strangers, that's what made it so interesting. You would have thought, you know, when I first got there, I mean it wasn't an uncomfortable place, but you would have thought that, when I started to talk to somebody, it would have seemed like, it's almost like there wasn't much even in the way of introductions. A.C. As if you've known each other from somewhere or other from before? V. Either that we had known each other, or about each other, or were just the kind of people who found it easy to get to know one another. It just wasn't. It wasn't like when you meet a stranger. We had reached a logical stopping place in what had turned out to be a remarkable session. I signaled Dr. Claymore and she nodded agreement. After a minute or so of instruction about how relaxed she would feel, and how easy about what she had learned, Virginia came out of the trance. She yawned, stretched, and smiled, and the tension broke. We all realized at that moment how deep our concentration had been, and how intense our psychological involvement in her unfolding adventure. It was well into the dinner hour, so we departed quickly. I hardly knew what to say after the revelations of the past hour, but I mumbled good bye and thanked them for their time. Then I headed back to my place in Chelsea to mull over what we had learned. So many things coincided with other abduction cases. In fact, all during the hypnotic session, little bells of recall kept sounding in my mind, as detail after familiar detail surfaced. When I had time finally to re-examine some of the case material, I found the specific parallels I was searching for in other accounts, most of which are either completely unknown to the public, or at least extremely obscure. The general description of the circular walls and the even, sourceless lighting of the examining room naturally fit the pattern. But there was an interesting detail about the color of the light. Virginia had said that it might be pale gray, or a real soft gray, pearly, those kinds of colors. Gray or pearly seemed odd words to use to describe bright light, but in the 1976 Casey County, Kentucky, abduction of three women, Miss Elaine Thomas, under hypnosis, also described the examining room as being lit by a gray light. One Barney Hill, under hypnosis in 1964, described the room in which he underwent some kind of physical examination as being filled with this bluish light, which didn't cast any shadows. David Stevens, abducted with a companion in Maine in 1975, thought the curving walls of the examining room were gray and the floors shiny. So we have a narrow band of colors used to describe the atmosphere: pale, soft gray, pearly, bluish, denoting a cool, specific range far away from either white, which one might expect, or a normal incandescent range. Virginia described this gray light as being very bright. In fact, she frequently rubbed her eyes during the hypnotic period. In her second session, she even complained that the subdued lighting in Dr. Claymore's office was too bright, and ultimately we had to switch off the lamps and continue almost in the dark. Carl Higdon Comerford, who was abducted in Wyoming in 1974, complained later about the lights in the hospital room where he was taken after his ordeal. They were too bright, he said. His eyes were extremely bloodshot and teared constantly. Mona Stafford, another of the women in the Casey County case, suffered a severe burning and tearing of the eyes. Her two companions also had trouble with their eyes, though Mrs. Stafford's problem was so severe that she consulted a doctor. Betty Hill, 6, describing her position on an examining table as she recalled it through hypnosis, said, "The light is very, very bright, so my eyes aren't always open. I'm a little scared, too. I'm not particularly interested in looking at them, the humanoids who are performing the examination." Young Jerry Armstrong was abducted at the age of 12 from the grounds of the school he was attending in England. When he was found 7 hours later, he remembers, there was something wrong with his eyes, although he is not sure what the problem was. He feels he might have been told that his eyes were dilated. This abduction of a 12-year-old in 1953 creates an interesting additional parallel, the very early taking of a child. But through many of these encounters, the Wyoming, Kentucky, New Hampshire and English cases I have cited are only a random sample. Eye reactions are extremely common. Prior to her second hypnotic session, which turned out to be more startling even than her first, Virginia discussed with Drive Claymore and me some further specific details which she had consciously recalled. Hypnosis is an odd process in that most frequently after the subject comes out of the trance he or she continues to remember things. It is a little like turning off the garden hose. The flow immediately slows, ebbs, and finally trickles to a stop. The turn of the valve does not produce instantaneous results. In a conversation which was, of course, recorded at the time, Virginia said this about the equipment which made the cut on her leg. It was something like dental equipment, but much smoother. It didn't look like something abrasive or scary. It was more like, maybe half the size of your torso, mostly smooth like a metal box with rectangular contours, but rounded, and with fixtures that might pull out, you know, to do things like dental equipment does. It's retractable but nothing so sharp and crude as that, more like soft contours. More like a tentacle. It was as though the thing that touched me was just like a massager, like those electric massagers, the long ones. Just something simple, looking, almost a tubular thing. It reached out and just laid against my leg. It looked to be all metal. No obvious cutting edges or anything like that. It didn't have any real evidences of fine instrumentation, you know, cutting edges or plucking edges or filing edges. Just a simple, tubular object, which came out of a box-like instrument on the end of a retractable arm. I asked if she noticed any sound. A soft vibration, maybe. I think I felt it, but I don't think I heard it. David Stevens, whose 1975 abduction in Maine I have already mentioned, described lying on a table near a machine which looked square, had lights on the left side of the front. And it had an arm coming out with something on the end of it, like some kind of X-ray machine or something. A. Betty Hill described a device, which was like a letter opener in shape, which scraped over her arm. 91 of the Kentucky abductees recalls an elongated bullet, shaped object about an inch, and, 1.5 in diameter being placed on her chest. 10 It seems to me these witnesses are trying to describe the same equipment through the use of various homely images, with varying degrees of success. Virginia's elongated massager image describes an object conventionally about 6 or 7 inches long by about 1.5 inches in diameter, which accords nicely with Elaine Thomas's bullet-shaped cylindrical object about 1.5 inches in diameter. This silhouette, of course, is not unlike that of a letter opener. And most interesting is the persistent neutrality of the description, an object that seems efficient and totally unspectacular in appearance. It constitutes the exact opposite of the complicated Star Wars gadgetry so inescapable in pop culture. Virginia's machine gains validity to me by virtue of its plainness and simplicity. When Ted Blocher listened to the tape of Virginia's hypnotic session, we were able to discuss at length the new factors which it presented. First of all, as I've mentioned before, the Hill case of 1961, which surfaced only in 1964, was for many years the earliest abduction case which had been satisfactorily investigated and eventually accepted by most UFO investigators. But here we were, with a case that preceded it by 11 years. A few other cases earlier than 1961 had come to light in the years following John Fuller's book on Betty and Barney Hill, and a few had been rather summarily studied, though very few had been explored through hypnosis. Here, we had an unfolding case with an eminently intelligent and credible witness, who bore a physical trace, Virginia's very noticeable scar. See illustrations section. Even more important was our realization at that moment that Virginia, like Stephen Kilburn, had no conscious recall of a UFO sighting. When these two cases, which we had uncovered, were seen in context with the Patty Price case of 197,311 and the Judy Kendall case, we knew that there was a sub-group within the UFO abduction spectrum. Cases in which people are abducted and all memory traces of a UFO sighting are subsequently suppressed. As Stephen wondered aloud on NBC's UFO presentation, how many people may have had this experience without knowing it? And how many years has it been going on? Ted Blocher, drawing on his mental storage files, pointed out that a significant number of humanoid cases over the last decades involved sightings by children, and many of these took place in rural settings. In dozens of instances, children reported that, while they were outside playing, one or two small men wearing strange silvery or gray costumes approached them and then departed as suddenly as they had appeared. How many of these cases, we wondered, might have involved time lapses that a 6-year-old girl or a 10-year-old boy, playing alone in the afternoon, would never have noticed? What were the dimensions of the problem?